This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up later on today's show, Cincinnati fans are getting a big kick out of the city's new professional soccer team. Here now to talk about health risks affecting minorities, the key factors contributing to those risks, and ways to improve health, our Cincinnati Health Department Director of Health Promotion and Worksite Wellness, and Project Director for Creating Healthy Communities, Denisha Porter, and Interim Health Commissioner for the City of Cincinnati, Dr. Odell Owens. The Coalition and the Health Department recently hosted a discussion to figure out pressing needs for minorities and how to better serve the health and wellness needs of Cincinnatians. You can join us in our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Denisha and Odell, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you for having me.
Odell, what are the frequent health issues that are facing minorities in Cincinnati? What are they encountering?
Well, for a long time, I think the number one issue was access, how to get to health care, how to get contacted with a doctor or health facility. The Affordable Health Care Act has certainly changed that. Within the Cincinnati Health Department, we have 40,000 patients that we take care of, and our uninsured rate after the initiation of the Affordable Health Care Act went from about 65% down to about 20%, which is tremendous. People can come in and get those services. So I think that part of health has the access part has been almost addressed completely.
So access is improving. What
getting there, being able to get the services, there. Being able not just be able to see a doctor, but through our centers and other centers similar to us, you can be able to see a doctor, get a prescription, get your lab tests done, X-rays, colonoscopy, and those kind of things.
Denisha, what about in terms of the diseases that minorities face? Are there certain ones that they have to deal with more often?
Definitely, I would say heart disease, cancer, stroke, diabetes. Those are the top four diseases I would say minorities have to face.
What's the impact on minorities compared to other populations?
Well, you know, we look across the board of minorities. If you look at, say, the Mexican population, they tend to have diabetes much earlier than other minority groups. And so, therefore, when they come in and present for treatment, they've had it for 2 or 3 years. So oftentimes, that population may have to start with 2 medications right off the bat, where other populations don't. But when you look at these issues, their expression is different from one group to another. We just mentioned, say, hypertension and heart disease. If you look at a Caucasian woman who has congestive heart failure, hers is due to coronary artery disease. That's where the arteries, as you know, get blocked. And so that intervention for that group is going to be different than for black women. For black women, the number one cause of congestive heart failure is hypertension. So for that group, you would need to go and make sure you initiate treatment for hypertension early, the proper medication, and get them to goal. So you get one disease, but the manifestation of how it is differs from one ethnic group to another.
How much of a role does ethnicity and culture versus economic status, how do those things play out? In other words,
economics is always going to play out first.
Goes back to the access.
Back to access. I mean, you know, and that's demonstrated by the fact that the more educated you are, the longer you live. That is clear. That way, if you compare people with a PhD or an MD to people who dropped out of high school, people dropped out, even when you correct for income, they don't live as long. So we know that education plays a role. Now, part of that means that you probably had a job that gave you insurance, and so therefore you could get all the preventative measures done, like a colonoscopy, like an EKG.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. What kinds of things came out of the recent community discussion that you had on minority health?
Well, one of the things that came out of the event was that people wanted to know more about the Cincinnati Health Department services and what we can offer to allow them to be healthier. And then the second thing that came out of the event is they really thought that what we do at the health department should be combined with social determinants of health, so that's your jobs, transportation, housing, things of that nature. So those were the two main things that came out of the local conversation event.
Okay. And talk about the services. What kind of services are available?
Well, we have plenty of services. So we have our environmental health department that does our inspections. So that's looking at homes and restaurants, making sure everyone is safe. We have our health promotions department, which I work in. through the Creating Healthy Communities program, we really work on policy, systems, and environmental changes to make sure that people are healthy. So that's like getting people to farmers markets, urban farms, making sure that people can walk and bike in their community, and making sure that tobacco-free living is available in every community and work sites and within their homes.
Our mantra is we keep you safe where you work, play, or live.
Mm-hmm.
We're better than the TSA.
And then we have our primary care centers and our nursing department, our maternal and child health. We just have a plethora of different services at the health department.
Can you talk about, Odell, when we talk about a health disparity, can you talk about what that means and give us some examples in Cincinnati of things that are health disparity?
Well, you know, we certainly know that when you look at health, as I say, ethnicity plays a role. If you look at cancer, more African-American men will develop cancer than Caucasian men. However, more Caucasian women will develop cancer than African-American women. But then when you start looking at cancer, breast cancer, African-American women have a different type breast cancer than Caucasian women. These are women that have a very aggressive cancer that does not respond to some of the normal first-line treatment that everybody else is offered. And that's why it's important that we really focus on culturally competent health care, that when an individual walks into a room and you have to look at who they are, whether they're Caucasian, whether they're Hispanic. And even within the Hispanic, you have to break down between, let's say, Latino or Puerto Ricans. Puerto Ricans in New York get a far more number of mammograms than, let's say, Cubans in Miami. The Cubans in Miami get more pap smears than the Puerto Ricans in New York. So every group is different based on their culture experience and things that they see. And that's going to direct how they relate to the system. But more important, you got to have people who are trained to recognize that if I see an Asian person, I better think more about liver cancer than some of the other cancers that we typically see in Americans.
Now, you cited access is improving. That was one of the barriers. What are some other barriers that minorities face in terms of getting preventive care, in terms of getting properly diagnosed and getting the proper care, period?
Well, I would just say it's more or less access. And I would even think upstream from that is the promotion, like actually helping people to live a healthier lifestyle before they actually get to the hospital and have to worry about treatment.
And then you have the culture. Yeah. Really, there's a culture aspect mm-hmm. of how you relate to healthcare. You know, when I was in the coroner's office, you know, we were really focusing on sudden infant deaths and infant mortality. And one of the things we initiated with the public is for more women to put their babies on their back. But when people went out to train people in the minority community, when they went to train these young mothers about putting their babies on their back to sleep at night, it didn't work. Because it's the grandmother in the family that teaches the young girls how to take care of baby. And then grandmother, all her years, always put the baby on his or her stomach. So sometimes, again, you have to understand the culture that you first work with the grandmother before you can even work with the mother.
What about diversity among doctors and healthcare professionals? Is that another issue, multiculturalism for doctors?
Absolutely. There are not enough minority physicians in Cincinnati, yeah. And we know that. As I said, again, having that background gives you a better insight. I'll give you an example. When I was an intern, a senior medical student, we were talking to a woman in one of our clinics in my training program, and she was talking about her greens. She cooks greens on Sundays. And the chief resident, who was Caucasian, she was black, and she also said she cooked fried chicken. So he was trying to tell her about the calories, and he didn't understand that I knew that she saved her bacon grease all week and cooked the chicken in the bacon grease, which is lots of calories, lots of bad stuff.
Yes.
He's thinking she's cooking with something more lean. And he thought if he just told her to give that up, that she would give it up. That's culture. She's going to save that bacon grease. She's going to cook that chicken on Sunday in bacon grease. So you got to understand the culture to know exactly where you can begin to make some changes and substitutions.
How do you think we address that, the lack of minority healthcare professionals?
Well, first, I think you have to just get, I think, a cross-section of people who look like people. You know, when the healthcare system began to bring more women in, mm-hmm. you know, we benefited. You know, certainly in OBGYN for a long time, that was mostly men providing health care to women. Mm-hmm. I think the dynamics changed when more women went into that specialty because they could bring in a more sympathetic ear. Yes, I've experienced it. Yes, I know what that's like. As a man, as a gynecologist, I can only say I've heard that a lot, but I can't give that firsthand experience. So I think we all see all of us bring something to the table. I don't care who you are, male, female, black, white, brown, green, green. We all bring something to the table. See, for me, inclusion for me is not the old mixing bowl. Black and white in a pot, brown stirred together. It makes a very ugly color. My philosophy is the salad bowl. I believe in the salad bowl. And that is that if you put in a salad greens, if you put in the brown of a crouton, the orange of a carrot, the white of the onion, the black of the olive, wow, what a great taste all of those are, as opposed to if you just ate just salad greens or just white onions all day, or the brown crouton.
Denisha,
making me hungry.
He is, isn't he? What are your thoughts about that? How do we get more minorities into the healthcare profession?
I think you have to expose more minorities to more job opportunities in the medical field. And so I'll speak from my personal experience. When I went to Miami University, I was actually pre-med, so I was looking to be a doctor. But I found out after shadowing a couple of doctors that I'm kind of squeamish around blood, so I don't really like that whole...
Decided that wasn't for you.
No, I didn't like it. So, but there was actually someone who exposed me to public health, and I had no idea about that whole field. And when I started taking classes in public health, I really found out that that's really for me and that's where I shine. And I just think if we're exposed to different opportunities, different things within the medical field, I think that we'll learn to do those things.
Do you have to start at the grade school level? Do you have to start this process early, you think, of getting minorities involved in the healthcare profession?
Well, I think you do. I think you have to talk about the various health fields. I mean, and she's correct. You know, most people think of just doctors and nurses in the healthcare field, and that's just other kinds of occupations.
Right, healthcare is a very broad.
Very broad. And it's going to be the number one industry for hiring for the next 10, 15 years. So you have to start broad and drill down. First, you got to drill down to kids in kindergarten. They can go to college and talk about college or talk about training programs. Now, everyone needs to go to college. There are many people who get a good certificate program and can get a good job supporting their family.
We will continue our conversation, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and my guests this afternoon are Cincinnati Health Department Director of Health Promotion and Worksite Wellness and Project Director for Creating Healthy Communities, Denisha Porter, and Interim Health Commissioner for the City of Cincinnati, Dr. Odell Owens. You can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's go to Joe in Northside. Hi, Joe.
Hi. I have three comments. One, I did not hear, and it might have been there, discussion about a cultural barrier of language. I know that when I practiced in New York City, Mandarin, which is a very, you know, different thing, but a large community there, was a real problem. The second is part of the same first. Even when you get or have access, there's lots of suspicion about Western medicine and the things that we do. And that I didn't hear. When people get access, there's research that proves, the wider the distance in demographics, like race and sex, and between the patient and the provider, the research proves that because of the obstacles of demographics, language, et cetera, they don't get the quality care because it's too difficult to get through. And finally, my comment is, pretty much for our entire population. When people get into the hospital in critical condition and are admitted to ICUs, in my opinion, that's a full-on failure of our healthcare system to serve in its health promotion and early detection, you know, efforts. So I'd like to hear from your panel.
Okay. Okay, Joe, thank you. Language. How big a barrier is that?
Well, absolutely. And she's correct. I think here in Cincinnati, we have a growing Hispanic population. And in our health centers, we make every effort to, especially the one in Price Hill, to ensure that we have an interpreter there. But she's correct. I think even when you have an interpreter, something's missing. You know, it's not making that direct contact. Oftentimes, you're not even looking at that patient because you're looking at the interpreter, and the interpreter is talking back to the patient. So you missed out a little bit of that, little bit of that connection. But at least here in Cincinnati, and actually by law, the Affordable Health Care Act says you must have interpreters in your health care center for people who are not speaking the main language. She mentioned Mandarin. I think she's correct. In fact, one of the best Mandarin clinics are Mandarin healthcare centers in Boston. They recognized that same thing and created a center that drew mostly Mandarin patients. But over the next 10 to 15 years, it just blossomed to a major healthcare center for everybody in that particular neighborhood.
Yeah, I would like to add, in addition to our healthcare centers, we also have interpreter services for all the rest of our programs. So within lead, environmental, public health, health promotions, nursing, we also have those services for everyone. And we also had those services available at our local conversations event.
She also brought up suspicion of Western medicine. How much does distrust of the medical establishment play into?
Well, that's certainly a role. I think when you look at the African-American community for a long time, they were tainted by the Tuskegee experiment. The Tuskegee experiment started in 1942 by the American Public Health Service. It started in Alabama with 300 black males who had syphilis. And the Public Health Service decided they wanted to see what would be the natural history of the progression of the disease by not treating these 300 men. And so they didn't get treatment. They saw them once a month, and what they told these men, and they didn't tell the men they had syphilis. They didn't tell them they had syphilis. They told them they had bad blood. They had to come in once a month where they were studied and blood tests was done. And they were given breakfast and lunch and told them, because you're here, we're going to give you free burial when you need it. That went on for 40 years. Program started in 1942. Penicillin was discovered in 1947, which would have treated syphilis. It would have stopped the progression. But in Tuskegee, what happened, the American Public Health Service then went to the private physicians in the community and say, here's a list of patients that you cannot treat for syphilis. There are patients that are in our experiment. You're not allowed to treat them, even though there's a cure for this disease. So many of these men suffered horrible, horrible lives. 19 wives were affected and 49 children were born with syphilis. So from that, there's been and this is the government. This is the government. So from that, you have this whole suspicion of healthcare by minorities in terms of having that trust or wanting to participate in any type of experiment.
Trust is easy to lose. I think it's tougher to regain. How do you get that the trust back?
I think it all starts with listening, and so that's what we try to do with our program, Creating Healthy Communities. We go out and we talk to community members, and we really listen to their concerns, and we try to implement what they talk about into our strategies. An example of that is when we went to Wynn Hills, one of our focus neighborhoods. We went there and we started talking about how you can be more physically active, and we talked about walking trails and biking trails. And what we found out is that one of the issues that came up was crime. And so I went back to my team and I said, what can we do to really address crime? And what we found is we can do crime prevention through environmental design principles. I don't know if you've heard of that. But
no.
It's basically
it sounds intriguing, though, so keep going.
Yeah, so crime prevention through environmental design, or CEPTED, is basically changing the environment so people feel safer to go outside and be physically active. So whether that's making sure the landscaping is appropriately cut, or if you have appropriate lighting, that's kind of what crime prevention through environmental design is. And so we really had to start there before we could even address having more walking or biking trails.
Simply putting a fence around homes actually decreased crime. People then can't cut through houses, and it's a little harder for people to get in. Simple stuff.
She also mentioned, was talking about it, she considers it a failure if it gets to the point where you're so ill, you're in the hospital in critical condition because you just haven't you haven't taken care of yourself or gone to the doctor to be treated. That's a valid point.
I think she's made a great point. It's a great point in terms of where, but the question is, where is that failure? And it's certainly going to be on the healthcare system, but also in the individual. You know, we all have to take some personal responsibility. And I give you an example. You know, if you go to most people's home, look in their medicine cabinet, you're going to find some pills that have not been taken. Yet the doctor said take 3 pills a day for the next 10 days. People feel better after day 6, day 7, and they stop taking their medication. Well, what does that do? It may mean you may not be totally cured, or by only taking those 7 days, you may start a process that will cause that bacteria become more resistant to that antibiotic because you didn't totally kill it off. You allowed it to survive enough to morph itself into some resistance. So we all got to take a responsibility, but you're right. You want to be in a system where people can get into healthcare, interact with healthcare before they get into an IU or a surgical care unit.
Has the Affordable Care Act had an impact on that? Are we seeing more people getting preventive care because of it?
I think so. Certainly in our health centers of 40,000 patients, we certainly are seeing more colonoscopies than we've ever seen in the past. And that's a test to ensure to see if you have colon cancer. And if you can pick that up early, boy, you change your whole life.
513-419-7100. And Gloria in Evanston joins us now. Hi, Gloria.
Hi there.
Go yep. right ahead.
Okay. I'm calling about mental illness and mental health. And I've heard nothing said about that, the impact that it has on our community, well, on everyone, not just the people who are living with the illness. I'd like to hear something said about what public health is doing.
Yeah, we've been addressing physical illnesses to this point.
And when you think of it, you know, the brain is part of your physical features as well. And that's the impact that mental illness has. It has an impact on the brain, but it manifests itself in different behaviors. So I'd like to hear something that's being done and addressing that, especially in the African-American community, where there's so much trauma because of the violence that takes place in our community.
Okay, Gloria, thank you for the call.
And that is something that we're just starting to look at. So with the Creating Healthy Communities Coalition, we focus on healthy eating, active living, and tobacco-free living. But we do recognize that mental health is an issue that we should address. And to start doing that, we're going to have a presentation next month at the Cincinnati Health Department from 10 to 12 to talk about mental health. And we're going to have Gloria Walker, who's going to be our presenter, and she's from NAMI. And we're going to start that discussion to see how we can integrate mental health services within our coalition.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the discussion. Outreach and education, Odell. What are the various ways the health department is trying to get its message out, trying to reach people on this?
Well, Denisha has a great group in which they meet on a monthly basis in about 80 different groups from the community. So they come together and first are able to share their expertise and what they're doing. Then I think you know we do some things on television where we will answer questions on Zika virus or the heat. We will do radio shows, but what we lack in Cincinnati is a true, true infrastructure to really disseminate information quickly, reliably, and on a regular basis. And that's one of the things we want to look at. How do we develop some partnerships and collaborations with all the TV stations, with all the radio stations, so that information can go out in a quality manner, but also a timely manner?
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the Health Power website? Can you tell me about that?
The Health Power?
Health Power website. I noticed. No? Okay. It is a resource. I've noticed it. If you have questions about various different issues, it's a good resource for. It deals with minority issues. It deals with all kinds of health issues. So I just wondered if you'd run across that or use that in your.
No.
Okay. 513-419-7100. Jane in Dayton joins us now. Hi, Jane.
Hi, and this is specifically in regard to the African American community, but eating properly, exercise. For instance, I'm not a vegetarian, but people think I am because I eat a high fruit and vegetable, high grain diet. I'm also a walker. I actually walk my neighborhood. If anywhere I need to go, if it's within 4 miles, I will walk. And a recent shopping experience I had in an African-American neighborhood at a chain store where I usually buy frozen vegetables, they don't sell them because they sit on the shelf until they expire. So my comment is, or question is, how much does exercise, eating properly, impact healthcare, specifically in the African-American community?
Well, you know, people now say that sitting or a lack of exercise is the new smoking, mm-hmm. meaning all the kind of things when people smoked, all the kind of things that could happen to them. One of the things that happens in a typical minority neighborhood, whether it be poor African-Americans or even poor whites, is sometimes a lack of a great grocery store that carries a variety of fresh vegetables, willing to make that investment, because sometimes you don't sell them all. So a lot of stores say, well, I don't want to keep them because they may rot. But I think if you had them, people would buy them. And so what happens, they tend to have more stores associated with a gas station, a little corner store that's not carrying fresh meats. They're carrying processed meats in the packages, the ham, the bologna, the salami. They're not carrying fresh vegetables, so people don't have that. In terms of exercise, you know, again, we look at a community that used to have all the harder jobs, construction, maids, tough jobs. Many minorities, when they came home, they felt sitting on the couch for the rest of the evening was their reward for a hard day's work. So it wasn't about, I'm not going to go out and exercise because I worked hard all day. So we certainly have to change the culture that the hard work you may do on the job may not necessarily equal to taking that walk that you're doing, that mile or 2 mile or 3 mile walk. So much is just changing the history. At the same time, many minorities will tell us they live in neighborhoods where they don't feel safe. They're not going to take a walk in the neighborhood. They don't even let their kids go out and play because they have fear of the violence that sometimes are in certain communities.
So looking forward, where do we need to head from here in terms of dealing with health disparities and improving health care for minorities?
Well, from a health promotion standpoint, I would say it's all about the policy systems and environmental changes. So making sure the infrastructure can be changed so that people can choose a healthy lifestyle. So, for instance, what Dr. Owens was talking about with the grocery stores. So, like he said, there's not a lot of access sometimes to fresh fruits and vegetables. So Produce Perks is a great example of a systems change where we provide dollar for dollar up to $10, giving people $20 buying power at a farmer's market to actually purchase those fresh fruits and vegetables.
And the other piece is to get people into quality health care. They have to develop a relationship with the health care center where they can have their own doctor or their own group of doctors and be able to not only to see the doctors, follow through on any testing and on any treatment.
So going back to the idea of improving access.
Right. Mm-hmm.
One more call here. Kimberly from Wyoming. Hi, Kimberly. Go right ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
I was calling in to just see what role immunization is playing in the city in helping with health promotion and wellness, not only in infancy, but throughout adolescence. And how do you guys get folks back in to get their immunizations throughout their lifetime?
Well, certainly in the healthcare centers, when you talk about the children, most parents know their kids have to be immunized, and certainly the school system will reinforce that because if you don't have certain immunizations, you may not be able to put your child in school. So that, for children, happens. I think for adults, that's a real challenge. You know, people get their tetanus shot and never come back and get a booster. And there are other things that people should probably get boosters on, and they don't. Because, again, most adults, if they feel that they're healthy, that's when they say, I don't need to interact with the healthcare system. And that's not true. The healthier you are, probably that's the time to certainly still interact because you're doing something right.
Odell and Denisha, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
Cincinnati Health Department Director of Health Promotion and Worksite Wellness and Project Director for Creating Healthy Communities, Denisha Porter, and Interim Health Commissioner for the City of Cincinnati, Dr. Odell Owens. Coming up, we'll hear about the recent success of professional soccer in the city and why FC Cincinnati is attracting lots of fans. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.